I'm a big believer in just experimenting and having fun. Don't think you've got to follow one man's plan. You know, there's a lot of people out there saying you have to do it this way or do it that way. Do it your way, man. Have some fun with it. That's the big thing.
I agree. I do a couple things, and some of it, some of you guys might agree with, might not agree with, but I like to know what my neighbors are doing as well. So in the fall, I'm probably going to take my drone up and I'm going to fly across their property, or a lot of mine. Honestly, I could go walk on it. They wouldn't care. You know, we're neighbors. They'd probably tell me if I wanted to know. But what that allows me to do is, you normally you have a crop rotation, right? You don't want to plant brassicas in the same field too many times. So if they had brassicas in a plot, I can probably guess it's going to be cereal grains or a spring plot, which then I can change my strategy for. I don't want a brassica plot on top of their brassica plot, right? That's sure. My goal. Or I also use it more for what the local farmers are doing, because I want to know what their strategy is. And by me, you know, I don't know what Missouri is anymore, but a lot of the guys are just cash cropping, right? So it's corn and beans, and basically they alternate every other year. You might do beans 2 years in a row, but never corn 2 years in a row. So I'm really focused on what they planted last year, because if I know it's probably going to go into corn this year, or if it was corn and it's going to go into beans this year, I'm going to definitely feed off that. Because my whole strategy, and it's a little different than a lot of people, I always tell people it's like a bicycle tire, right? It's like a spoke. With the center of my property is where the bedding area is, and then I plant a lot of smaller food plots with some larger destination ones. But my destination plots are all closer to you know, the farmer's fields, because I want them to hit these little, you know, these little micro plots that can be anything from, you know, a quarter acre to 3/4 of an acre. I don't think I got any of them that are really larger than that. But what it does is those deer come out from the bedding area, and normally they'll just hit that spot and they'll stay in for 10 or 15 minutes and then they move on. And they might hit the next plot and the next plot, but their final goal is to get on the outside of those fields. And what that does is now I'm sitting on, as a hunter, I'm sitting on a food plot where I don't have to sit there all night thinking 30 deer are going to be in that plot and now worried about getting out. With a smaller plot, it seems like they're moving on to that next spot. And when it gets, you know, in the evening, I can easily crawl down or wait for the one or two deer that are left, because I know they're going to vacate that area as well. And then it gives me the opportunity, like you said, to test a lot of different products. So it's a great strategy if you have the ground, right? How many acres are you planting right now?
I think in total, it's probably 18, somewhere in there. I'm adding some more plots. My farm's not big, you know, it's only 160 acres, so it's not real big. It may be big to some, but you know, you make some good points there looking around to see what other people are doing. But you know, because every farm is different, or every hunting place is different. You're talking about fields. I don't have any fields around me. I'm in timber country. So you know, I go fly a drone and everyone around me is all in timber. So, you know, they're putting out feeders, or, you know, they may have a little area where they clean out for their yard or something, but they don't have, there's not a lot of plots. So I'm doing things, it's not just planting, you know, food plots. I'm also looking at bedding, because, you know, I figure if I have bedding, I have food, I have water, they're not going to travel to my neighbors as much. I'm going to be able to hold them. You know, and what you said about the clover plots, that was brilliant too. I just did that a couple weekends ago. And, you know, the thing that's hard for us, because we're in timber country, I've got those little, you know, quarter acre plots, you know, that I put, I put clover in as my kind of, you know, destination plot, if you will. Yeah. But we got to keep the leaves off of them. You know, I'm in there constantly with a blower. You know, I had to go in and blow everything off before I could frost seed. So, you know, everybody's different, but, you know, I appreciate what you're saying about what you do.
Yeah, I got a question since you brought up feeders, because in Wisconsin, we can't legally bait or feed. You know, I know some people are feeding and some people bait yet, but how does that affect your food plotting? It's probably a different game, right? Because now you're competing against that as well. And what I found in some of those states where you can legally feed or bait, right, in Kansas, man, those feeders are a food plot on its own, right? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think a lot of that is going away. Vermont just passed a law, I believe, that, you know, they can't bait anymore. Missouri, you can feed, but when season comes, that feed better be away. You can't do any baiting. You know, I heard Texas and other states are going away from baiting as well. You know, I don't have, you know, an opinion either way, but, you know,
yeah.
Here in Missouri, we've got zones where you got CWD zones where you can't put out feeders. So where I'm at, it's not a CWD zone. So my neighbors put out feeders.
It's interesting. So the guys that don't understand why in CWD, they say the DNR says it's a nose-to-nose contact in that they leave so much trace, you know, slava and everything else there that it's easier for those deer to get it. And I know some people are saying, well, you food plotters are planting a food plot. Well, we're not concentrating those deer in such a small, small area, right? I mean, yeah, you might be concentrating deer on a third of an acre or a quarter of an acre, but it doesn't, you know, it's not that 20 deer in a circle of 10-yard radius, right? So that's why some of those states are doing that. But it's definitely a different strategy. So what's your favorite plot? I mean, do you like brassicas? Do you like, you know, spring, annuals, perennials? Do you do a mixture?
You know, honestly, I like them all. If I could do everything in clover, I would, because it's low maintenance.
Yeah.
But, you know, a great soybean plot really turns me on. No. You know, or those brassica plots in the fall when you got those huge bulbs, you know, or they're just giant, you know, that's a turn on too. But, you know, and just a good plot is what turns me on. I like them all.
Yeah, and I always tell people, deer like that variety, right? I mean, it's kind of like a person going to the smorgasbord. If you got multiple plots and different things, one night you'll notice that the deer are really concentrated maybe in those standing beans. Two nights from now, they might be in your brassica. So it's good to have, you know, that mixture on your property and then really focus on where the deer are coming from. Early season, I like to sit closer to the field edges. I don't want to, you know, burn through my whole property. So a lot of times our annuals, you know, are closer to those farm egg fields. So it's low impact, right? Low to get in and out. I don't have to worry about it. And let's talk a little bit about that strategy. You know, like a lot of people plant a food plot. I'm going to tell you about one of my mistakes. And it's so funny. So we get to test a lot of products, right? So one of the food plot manufacturers sent us a bag, you know, prototyped. And I was afraid to put it in one of my regular plots because I've done it before and had some dogs and I didn't want to put it in a good one. Well, it was right when they were coming out with brassicas when nobody really knew about brassicas. And I planted a brassica plot in the middle of nowhere. And that November, I sat in one of my deer stands and totally watched, you know, 30 deer a night going to this with a couple shooter bucks going, I put that food plot in an absolutely worst spot possible. There's no way I can hunt it. There's no way I can get to it. I can't get out of it. And literally all I could do is sit and watch all these deer sit there and feed on that food plot. And that made me think about entry and exit points, right? So now I really focus on that. I don't want to blow those fields out. And some of them, we use a little strategy where you know, I'm fortunate where my property is right where my home is. And I'll have my son blow out the deer with the ATV. You know what I mean? Like, rather than me scare him out, if we're in one of those spots, just come down here by the pond, drive by the plot, scare the deer in, and then I'll get out of the plot. And it works. The big thing, it's a lot like a food plot, like a deer stand, right? I mean, the more pressure you put on it, if the deer realize their pressure, they're still going to use it, but it's that nighttime activity. Do you got any tricks or tips that you can use, you know, for individuals, you know, with getting in and out of your stands?
Gosh, with my property, you know, my property's shaped like an L. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, one of the things I do is pay attention to the winds. So I might be, you know, entering from different sides. I look at it as my property is I have three corners. So I try to look and see where the wind's coming from. And then I have a guest.
I can tell.
Yeah, sorry. And then look which point of entry is best for me at the time. I've got, I probably have more stands than what I need. I have a mixture of blinds and then stands, just to give me options. And I think that's what's best is you give yourself options because you don't know about the wind, and you've got to be, I think, cautious about, movement and daylight hours. You got to be able to make sure that path is clear that you can get in the dark, out in the dark,
Yeah.
and that sort of thing. But it's really paying attention to the winds more than anything, I
I
think.
100% agree. My property, believe it or not, is an L2. So,
Is that right?
so unfortunately, the perfect place is probably a big old square, right? Because then
Yeah.
it's all together and you have more ground to hunt. But the other thing that we do is we literally have some plots that we plant that we don't even hunt, really. I mean, we let no pressure whatsoever. They're in spots where we can kill the deer in transition area while they're going to that plot, and we don't have, really even have to sit on the plot. And during firearm season, to be honest with you, we only hunt basically on my 300 acres. We only hunt in a couple spots because I'm putting as little pressure on those deer, and we're not big gun hunters anyway. I love the archery, and that's my passion, right? So if my place can fill up with all the neighbors' deer and they don't get shot, I'll just have bigger bucks for the next year. So we kind of leave sanctuary areas. And at times, I think when my kids were growing up, it was a little bit of a frustration because we get now trail camera pictures of a good shooter, in a spot, and they're like, "Let's go back there." And I'm like, "Ah, let's just leave him back there. He'll come out." And sometimes they do come out, and sometimes they don't. But by those no pressure areas, we're able to hold and maintain deer. The other thing I really like about what you'd said is the variety of plants. I'm a big bean guy as well. If you get standing beans, I love brassicas in the fall. I love winter wheat and winter rye because it's the first thing that greens up in the spring for us. And they like it in the fall, but man, they love it in March, right? For us, March is the time when you get that first green up, which is really crucial for antler growth. Because if they can get that early protein source, they're probably going to get a boost to their antlers. What's it been like there? I mean, this year winter here has been pretty much non-existent other than about 3 weeks. It was extremely cold and we got dumped on with snow almost, over a foot. But now it's gone. I mean, we're February, what, 7th or 8th, and they're calling for rain by the weekend, which is highly abnormal for us. Normally we're in the 20s. And, with the lows still in the single digits, and we're way, way above that. I'm pretty sure it's the same for you, right?
Yeah, the temps are really high. I think one weekend, I don't know, it was last weekend, week before, we were up to 75. Odd thing is we've had a ton of rain. We didn't have, we were in the midst of a drought last year. We didn't have any rain. I think recently we had 10 days of straight rain.
Nice.
So maybe we're catching up, which is not a bad thing. But the thing is, with that said, because it's warm, everybody's thinking food plots.
Yeah.
You might, since ATA, man, my phone and email have been blowing up, which is a good thing. It's just winter will come back,
Yeah.
trust me.
I keep telling my kids it's here, right? You focus on that drought. So, like where you guys have hit it for a couple years in a row now, correct? So
Three.
what's yeah, three. We don't really worry about that in Wisconsin. I mean, honestly, like this year, we didn't get the. I normally plant my brassicas, say, at the end of July, and literally August was terrible. I mean, we just didn't get rain. September was warmer than normal, and we had more rain than normal. So my brassicas, even though they were in the ground for a month, they still did fantastic. Turnips didn't get as big, but the tops grew. What do you do for that drought year? Do you got plots that you, plants that you particularly plant to just in case it is a drought or not?
I last 3 years have been killed by drought. I mean, it just really suffers. You try to look for drought tolerant seeds. There's drought tolerant blends of soybeans and different things that you can plant. Last year was kind of unique because April planted plots, germinated quickly, got a little bit of growth, and then Mother Nature shut off the water. And then come August, same thing. We got planted around rain, got immediate germination, gotten green up, Mother Nature shut it off. one of the things that made me realize is I need to take out some does, because I had little plot going, but the deer came in and wiped out what was there, and because there was no rain, you know, they just wiped me out. So, you know, I went back in later and put out some winter wheat and stuff. But, you know, one of the things you said a minute ago about getting protein in the spring, I'm a big believer in that. You want to keep those animals healthy. But funny thing is, I've gone to blends in most of my plots, and each plot might have a different blend. But it's funny because people don't realize how smart deer are. When they go out there and there's a blend of, say, you know, 8 or 10 different things, they'll pick that plant that they want. They know when that plant is tender, when it tastes good. They know they start grabbing soybeans because they want the protein. You know, it's funny how animals, deer in particular, have a knack for knowing what their bodies need.
I you know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because one year my neighbor planted when brassica started taking off, and like I said, I was one of the early adapters, so we were planting turnips when the deer didn't even know what a turnip was, right? I mean, it took them a while to catch on. Well, as the craze really expanded with brassicas, next thing you know, my neighbors were planting them. And they can see some of my food plots where I have them. And the one, he's like, "What are you planting in there?" He goes, "I got purple top turnips. They're not eating any of mine." He goes, "But they'll eat yours first. And then late season, you know, when yours is gone and hunting season's closed, they're eating mine." And I didn't have the heart to tell him, but it was because he wasn't fertilizing his plots, right? So my plants were healthier, sweeter. Everything about my plants were better than his, so they ate mine first, and then they went over and ate his as a second choice, right? So that's another little thing. Yeah, yeah.
So that makes so much sense because, you know, if your pH is right, the plants taste so much better. And people don't understand that, but they should, because, you know, even something as simple as when you go to the grocery store and you grab lettuce, you can tell a difference in one head of lettuce and another because of the pH in the soil. You know, it's just everything transfers from the soil to the plant and the plant to us. And, you know, deer know. I mean, they get out there, "Oh man, that brassica tastes better than that one."
Yeah.
You know, they're gonna hang around with you. So, you know, pH is important to, you know,
yeah,
to pay attention to. Do those soil tests every year.
Yeah, exactly. I tell everybody the pH is like a water spigot, right? So when your soil is neutral and a good pH, that spigot's wide open. So those nutrients are getting all the way up, all the way down. You know, it's getting all the water. The plant's getting everything it needs. But when that pH is wrong, when you get that bad pH, it basically closes that spigot right down. So the plant can still get some of the stuff to grow. It's just not as healthy. So there's a little tip for you. Now let's talk about, you know, when you talk about drought, your products kind of fit right into that, especially with a no-till drill. Give me some benefits of a no-till drill versus conventional food plotting, like with a hand spreader, you know what I mean? Because when you went through everything, it made perfect sense to me.
I mean, there's a lot of benefits. Number one is the seed to soil contact. So you're going to have better germination. You know, people don't understand what that means, but you're going to use a lot less seed, you know, and you're going to get a better germination, a better plot by using a drill, because you're putting that seed right in the soil. Also, when you're using no-till and you're not turning the soil, you have better water retention. So that seed gets down there an inch deep, and there's water, there's moisture there, so it's going to grow. It's going to pull that moisture. You know, turning the soil is not as beneficial as no-till, because you're killing all those nutrients in the soil. Now, you can go back in and put, you know, fertilizer and different chemical means of making that soil rich and get away with that for years, but it's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you time. In the long run, it's not the best thing to do. People have done it for generations. Farmers do it all the time. But then they're back out there spraying and they're dumping fertilizer, and it's just, there's a lot of cost to it. So the world is changing. I think in the last decade, no-till farming has increased by 19% worldwide.
Yeah, and you see it by me right now. The farmers don't really work up the ground. It used to be, you know, they would have all their fields worked up before winter so that everything did break down. And now literally they're just using the no-till. They do, like, even their corn, they'll chop that so the vegetation all hits the ground, kind of like you just said. And I never thought about why they're doing it, but you hit it right on the head. I mean, they're doing it so that stuff rots and it gets those nutrients back in the ground quicker. I never realized that, to be honest with you, until we had the conversation today. And I think I know, I'm a food plotter for the last 20 years, right? I think I know pretty much a lot of things. I'm not saying I do everything right. I still do a lot of stuff wrong. But, you know, I'm one of those guys that test. And tell us a little bit about your unit, because just looking at it, I thought your unit made it look so simple compared to a lot of other drills that I was familiar with.
Yeah, well, that's a key thing with our drill is we try to make it simple, because the average food plotter is not a professional farmer. You know, and farmers, you know, they're doing that soy and beans rotation. You know, some do cover crops and different things. But with food plotters, you know, you're doing blends, you're doing beans, you're doing corn, you're doing so many different varieties. So, you know, we needed to make it simple, because the average user of our products are they're hunters, they're land managers, but they're not farmers. You know, they may be a business owner, an attorney, a guy that owns a restaurant or a little store or whatever. So, you know, they kind of know what they want to do. They watch the videos and stuff. But if you can make it simple, that's the trick. So we've made it to where you've got a couple knobs to turn, a pin to set. There's really three settings, no tools. And you can change, you know, the settings quickly. And that's another thing. You know, when I'm planting and I'm doing a plot, I'll go out and do my plot, but then I'll do the edge. I'll do the edge with screening. So I can change from putting out a blend to putting out a screen mix in seconds. Yeah. So it's all about simplicity. And that's what sets us apart from everyone else, really.
Yeah, what I liked about it when I was looking at it, not only that was it simple to use, because honestly, it's easier than my traditional grain drill, you know what I mean? Like, which is a pain in the butt to switch. It's a farmer's drill probably from the 70s, you know what I mean? Like, but you had made it so much easier than what it does, and mine wasn't a no-till. And if you guys are thinking about no-till versus tillage, look at when you use your tiller, right, or your plow or your disc, when you work up that ground. Like, especially if it's black, right? It is the darkest black ground in the world. And an hour later, you go back down there, and it's totally like this light black or light brown. And that is just the moisture that escaped from that plot. So all that moisture that got evaporated, it stays in the ground with a no-till, which, especially in a drought year, is a huge deal. But even up here in the Midwest, and the other thing that I wanted to mention about no-till versus tillage, every time you till the ground, you work up that seed bed, there are thousands of weed seeds that are in the ground, right, that are deeper, too deep to really grow, and you bring those back up, and now you got another problem. I planted my plot, but now I got to control the weeds in it as well, because all these weed seeds are back in there. For us, you know, reed canary grass is the devil. I mean, I got it everywhere. So if we work up our ground, we're going to have reed canary grass that we have to control. I mean, it's just a fact of life, because that areas where we plant food plots had been in reed canary grass since I was a kid. So for 40 years of seed before we started planting food plots in these areas is in the ground someplace. And that stuff stays kind of active. You know, it doesn't really rot in the ground as much as what you would think. And when you work it, you're going to get weeds. So
yeah, I've heard that so many times from people. You know, they're telling me, you know, I didn't have thistle before I turned the soil. I didn't have Johnson grass. I didn't have all these things that were trapped there in the soil. And then you turn the soil, you expose them. So for the next however many years, you're stuck spraying Roundup or 2,4-D or whatever, trying to control those weeds. Because once they get going, they get established. Man, you've got a task there. But the other thing is too, you're bringing up rocks.
Yeah.
You're bringing up things that are in that soil that just, you know, just make it a real pain in the neck, and it's hard on equipment. It's just, you know, there's a lot of reasons that no-till is a better process. I had so many people last year with the drought come to me and say, you know, I wasn't sure I did the right thing when I bought a no-till, but I can tell you, it saved my butt this year, because I got good germination, I got growth, when everybody around me doing tillage suffered. So you know, sometimes you gotta get out there and prove it to yourself, but you know,
yeah,
there's research that shows.
Well, and everybody looks at that nut of buying it, right? And they're like, oh, I don't want to spend that money. But with the seed savings that you have over the years is going to make a huge impact. The less weed control, it all adds up. And pretty soon you're paying for that drill in, you know, relatively short period of time.
Deer Talk Now is brought to you by Moultrie Mobile. The all-new feed hub from Moultrie Mobile is a remote game feed manager that's compatible with all major feeders. Remotely check feed levels, schedule feeding times, and instantly dispense feed directly from the Moultrie Mobile app. For more information, go to MoultrieMobile.com.
I want to talk a little bit about crimping, because that's a relatively new strategy that, especially in the food plot industry, I know they have done it in the egg. Explain that process and why it works and how it works.
Well, crimping, as you know, is you're rolling over cover crops, you know, and that could be anything from sorghum to, you know, to winter wheat, you know, hemp, sun hemp, to different things. So what you do is grow that cover crop, and that cover crop is fixing your soil. It's putting nitrogen and bits into your soil as it grows. But then in the spring, when before you go to plant, you take our roller, our crimper roller, over and push those cover crops down. And what happens is it's not just rolling over there and smashing them. It pinches the circulatory system of the plant so that it can't, you know, regenerate. You know, people ask me all the time, well, I could just mow. Or I could do this. Well, yeah, you can go in with a brush hog and mow it down, but you're going to spread it everywhere, and it's going to grow back. You know, when you mow your yard, it grows back because you didn't kill the plant. When you crimp, you're pinching the circulatory system, so that plant will die. And as you lay it over, you create a mat to where that mat suppresses the weeds, and then you come in with your no-till and you slice through that mat, and that's when, you know, your plant comes up. And as that mat decays, you get organic fertilizer from it. So, you know, over long term with the no-till and the crimping, you're reducing not only your cost of inputs on herbicides and fertilizer, but then you're decreasing your cost of seed. So people look at that nut, like you said, but if you're in long term, if you look at the savings you get year per year, you know, it may, you know, depends on the size of your farm, but eventually those machines are going to pay for themselves.
Well, and the other thing is, when you start looking at herbicides, not now, I mean, everybody thinks food plot seeds expensive, right? Man, you start looking at herbicides, Roundup, WD2, whatever, it's very expensive in a short matter of time. And now, one, I'm not going to have that weed control. Two, the other thing up by us, I mean, so many of the food plotters, I don't think, realize it, but these weeds will build up a resistance, right, to a Roundup, or even Roundup, which is Gly, which kills everything. But if you use that same thing year after year after year, it's going to build up a resistance, and soon you're going to have a Roundup, you know, variant, which isn't going to kill it. You know what I mean? So now you got to figure out another way to kill it. So if you do use herbicides, and I'm not against anybody using it, you got to really alternate what you're using. Use a grass killer one year, use a Roundup type product in a different year, so that you're not using the same thing, or use a broadleaf killer, you know, really niche it down. But I love the thought of crimping, and I'd first heard of it about 3 years ago, so that's why it kind of intrigues me, because I think it's going to definitely reduce the herbicides that I need, and then where you're building up that layer of you know, basically organic matter, right? It's going to release, yeah, it's going to be better for your soil in the long run. So really, not only is it helping the drought type of years, and now I'm getting natural fertilizer without spending the money, because as a food plotter, a lot of the little small guys aren't putting fertilizer on their plots. Because one, they don't know what to plant in there. Two, you know, or use for a fertilizer. Or two, it's expensive, right? I mean, once you plant the seed, you know, if you start fertilizing what it definitely needs, it's probably going to cost you a bunch of money. And some guys just don't want to spend that money, and they think they can get by without it.
And another big thing is the time savings. You've got two processes. You plant, you crimp. So you're not in tilling, planting, spraying again. You know, you got all these different processes you have to do with tillage, you know, and you're getting that organic fertilizer, for lack of a better term, that decays, that is also going to help your pH. I increase my farm from mid fives up into the sixes over 7 years by crimping. And then you get that, you also get the moisture retention from it as well. But, and you're not getting the heat on the soil. So again, that helps retain water.
I never thought about the pH, but that's huge as well. You know, lime, especially if you're using egg lime, it's cheap, right? But how many guys have a way to spread it? You know what I mean? Like, most guys don't have a drop mechanism, and you can't run the same, you know, your cedar with lime in it because it's so heavy, and a lot of times it's moisture and it gums up, and it honestly is kind of a pain in the butt to get it out. And that's why a lot of guys are using pelletized lime, which acts faster, but it's so much more expensive. So, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if you can control that pH with crimping, man, I'm all for it. It just would save the time and effort. How many years have you been using this method, Paul?
7 years. And to be honest with you, when I first started, Grant Woods had kind of turned me on to it. I mean, I'd done some research. I think the University of Wisconsin had done a lot. But, you know, it originated in South America, in Brazil. So I did a lot of research on what they did down there. And they're far advanced to what we do here. Unfortunately, we're behind the times. But as time grew, I stopped putting fertilizer and lime on my existing plots. And it didn't happen overnight. But over 7 years, I turned those plots around where I had red clay, low pH, and now I've got a couple inches of nice dark topsoil. And you know, it like I said, it doesn't happen overnight. And I recently cleared out a couple smaller plots to out of the woods that I'm going to put clover in. And, I'll start with lime and fertilizer and, you know, get into that process. I had a hard time finding someone to bring me lime. Down here, I just couldn't find anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, you know, there's that consideration. I don't know how it is up by you guys, but I called quarries and I called the MFA and I called everybody, hey, man, I just need a truckload of lime. Can you bring it to me? And I could not find anyone. So I ended up having to rent a dump truck and go get it myself. And had to drive quite a ways.
My problem is not getting lime. My problem is a lot of the spots we have these food plots are not set for big equipment, right? I mean, you can get a tractor in there, something that's 5.5 feet wide, but nothing bigger or heavier. So if I was going to get one of those big lime trucks on a spreader, I could never get it in. I'd plant that thing so far in the dirt, it you know what I mean? They'd never get it out. So that's another problem with lime because it's so heavy. But how does a guy get more information from you, Paul, for if they want to check into your line of PH Outdoors tillage equipment?
Yeah, go to our website, which is ph-outdoors.com. It's important. Don't forget that dash. All the stuff's on there. You can contact us through email through there. And I believe my phone number is on there if someone wants to give me a call.
Let's talk about sizes because, you know, one size doesn't fit all. I mean, you have units in different sizes for those bigger fields as well as smaller or ATV units. So give them a little spiel on the size units that you currently have.
We've got a 3 foot, 5 foot, 8 foot, and 10 foot. The three and the fives are our most popular sellers for whatever reason. All of them have tow kits available so that you can pull them by. The 3 foot, you could buy a UTV, ATV kind of thing. But the 5, 8, and 10 all have tow kits to where you could pull them behind a tractor if you wanted to. Some people don't have the horsepower to lift them because they are heavy. So they may use a smaller tractor and go with a tow kit. You know, they're designed for 3 point really, but we do have the tow kits. Our machines are close coupled to the tractor, so usually you can get away with a lower horsepower.
Sure.
The key to look for is a lift capacity. But yeah, the 3, 5, 8, and 10, and then on the crimpers we have a 4 foot, 6 foot, 8 foot, 10 foot.
Now, could you pull that 4-footer probably with your UTV as well, correct or not?
It's made with a tow kit, and it just flips over.
Nice.
Real handy. It's been popular, yeah.
I wanted just to 1 second so people understand why they're heavy. They're heavy, correct, because that helps them cut into the soil, right? I mean, you almost have to have a heavy unit to be able to get into that depth, right?
Yeah. I actually had somebody telling me that weight had nothing to do with it, and went out with a disc. I rigged this thing and put a disc on an acre meter kind of thing, and I put a disc on there, and I was rolling it, and I said, push that in the ground. They couldn't do it. You know, you slice through the grass a little bit. And the other thing I showed them, you know, it's really important. You try to educate people and tell them, hey, you can't turn those machines in the ground. You know, plan in straight lines, do gradual sweeping turns, don't make sharp turns. But one of the things I did with that person is we ended up beating the disc into the ground, and I said, turn it sideways. Oh, I can't turn it sideways. I said, that's what happens with a machine. You get 13 discs in the ground, you got 4,000 pounds sitting on it. Try to turn it. You're putting a lot of torque on that machine.
Yeah.
Roll it straight forward, you've got no resistance at all.
Yeah, and then lift it up, turn, and do straight lines. I always tell people, if you want to learn how to be a food plotter, watch your local farmer, right? I mean, like, if you watch him plant beans, that's exactly what he's doing. If you want to watch him plant corn, that's what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, so those guys know that. And some of the people might have a large enough tractor to pull that unit, but really you're putting so much strain on the equipment itself, especially the no-till unit, you're probably going to break something in the long term, right? So it's so much better for you to lift that thing up, do straight lines. And honestly, you get nice, a better looking food plot because it's all in straight lines. Yeah. Now, one thing about your unit that I was impressed as well, even in your hopper, right, you can separate that. So you could plant multiple types of plants. Like you could plant corn in a few rows or a few spots versus beans versus, so you could alternate that. So you could really do some cool things with stripping. I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, we've got what we call the bin dividers. So you could separate to where you put corn in two rows, beans in two rows, something else. You can divide it every other row if you wanted, or every three rows, or just, you know, divide the hopper. We put half and half. You know, there was a lot of demand for that. I've never done it personally. My buddy Jacob Landry has the idea that he's going to use the outside for beans, the other side for corn, I think, and he's going to leave the middle empty, and he's going to use that to make travel lanes. Thought, okay, that kind of makes sense. You know, the other thing we have is if you're wanting to have wider rows for corn, you wanted it at that 15 inch or 21 inch, we have what's called seed cover plates, so you don't need the bin dividers. You can just cover the different elements to where you can plant it at different widths. And we also have a small seed box. The idea behind the small seed box, and you don't need the small seed box to plant small seeds. You can do that in the standard box. But the idea is if you want to plant two varieties at different depths, so you can in the main box have a, you know, say corn or beans, you know, you're planting them in an inch and a half or something. You could put clover in your small seed box and just be kind of dropping it there on the surface and pushing it into the soil a little bit.
Nice. Yeah. I was impressed, guys. I don't get impressed by a lot of equipment, but the simplicity of Paul's system, what he has on, I mean, it's almost a no-till for dummies, and I don't want to say we're all dumb, but it makes it so simple that you really can't screw up, and it's one of those products that you have to check out. I'm definitely going to be looking at crimpers because if I can do anything to improve my soil long-term, it's just definitely the way to go. I don't like spreading Roundup every single year. You know, everybody hears about the GSM movement. Like, you know, people are trying to eat organic. If it's better for people to eat organic, it's probably better for my deer as well. And I'm all about growing any way I can get that deer healthier, bigger, The other thing about food plotters, I mean, a lot of people think we're just doing it to harvest animals, right? I'm planting food plots where I can see them from the house. I just like watching deer in my plots. And there's isn't there something to be said that watching deer eating a food plot that you planted, you get just appreciation. And it was kind of funny because our editor, Dan, wasn't a big food plotter. He never had ground. And he started planting, and he told me last year or a year before, man, I just like watching deer eat the food I planted. I was like, I know. I've been telling you that for years. It gives you a special place in your heart, and it's a great feeling. And you know, food plots are a way to make your deer herd healthy. Check out PH Outdoors. Paul, I appreciate all the input that you gave. I think you're right on the money, and I think as you know, ambassadors, stewards of the land, I think we got to do what's best for the land. And long term, I think the no-till and the crimpers is the way to go. Hopefully everybody else agrees. Thank you for watching Deer Talk Now. Tune in to next week's show. Thanks again, Paul. I appreciate having you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.